Hey, this is the Dissecting Liberty Podcast. I'm Cotton, joined as always with my co-host, Liberty Zero.
What's up?
And today we have a very special guest, Rollo McFlugel from the Rollo and Slappy Show. How you doing, man?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on, and thanks for restarting this after I might have given some compromising information about Slappy.
No worries, man.
I really like my co-host so much that I try to dox him.
And that info will be available in the Patreon version.
Right. I went to Mises U, and I went with several of the Insurrection Inc. podcast guys. And like we were talking and hanging out, having a great time. And every single time I would mention Liberty Zero, I'd accidentally use his real name. I think it was either the next morning, because you know we were like having cigars and whiskey, and next morning I texted Zero and I'm like, I said your real name so many times last night.
That's great. I do that with Slappy, except the opposite. I'll be with friends and I'll refer. I'll have to catch myself referring to Slappy. How was Mises U?
It was pretty cool. There weren't a ton of people. Like, I think usually they have like 150 students there. Mm-hmm. This year they had like 50.
Oh, wow. It's probably better for you.
Yeah, yeah. It was kind of like Childeberg. You know, like the... it would have been awesome if like actual Childeberg happened, you know, with the massive amount of people.
Mm-hmm.
But like what ended up happening was really intimate. That was cool in its own way, you know?
Oh yeah.
And Mises U was like that. The only issue was the faculty was cut down quite a bit.
Mm.
So like, I really wanted to meet David Gordon. That would have been awesome. But he wasn't able to make it. Walter Block wasn't able to come. That would have been cool. Papa didn't come, but he wouldn't have come anyway.
Yeah, probably like Ludwig von Mises, Murray Rothbard, yeah. Karl Menger.
They didn't make it. That sucked, man. But like, I met Tom Woods and Judge Knapp, and that was cool.
That's awesome.
And then I met, David and Stratton, who are doing the Law of Liberty podcast right now. They just had Carr on, and then they had Stefan Kinsella on, and that was really cool. So
nice, I met those guys.
Yeah, heavyweight, absolutely, man. This is the they definitely have a heavyweight podcast. A couple of heavyweights. So we have you on here to talk about your religion. And because, as I was saying before, I don't hear you talk about that very often, and I don't hear many people in our community talk about that very often, even though I know a lot of people in our community are religious. Mm-hmm. And I know that informs a lot of opinions, but I think it's, I don't know, I think it's a hole in the discussion, you know, so... why don't you go ahead and give us a bit of your background and your beliefs?
Sure. Yeah. It's kind of, I'm probably going to end up jumping all over the place with this, because there's a lot of things that inform my beliefs, whether that's religious, libertarian, how I kind of live my own life. And it's all been kind of meshing and morphing together. So I don't know that I can say that I started out with this one passage, this one point, and walked just down that path, and everything else kind of coalesced into that. It's more like each different path I go down, they're all kind of converging on the same point, and each one kind of is complementarily influencing the other ones, which is actually extremely exciting for me, because when everything's going to the same point, which is what I believe is truth, that makes it pretty neat, because you're like, wow, if I can approach this from all sorts of different ways and it's all going to the same place, that's like providing me with a lot of confidence that I'm going on a good path. as opposed to trying to, you know, being on a couple different paths, then one day realizing, wow, I can't really put these positions next to each other and kind of squaring them up. But all that said, I'm a Roman Catholic, what you would call a cradle Catholic. So I was baptized as a baby, went through Catholic school and everything my entire life. Actually, all 16 years of school, I actually went to a Catholic college too. I've been a practicing Catholic all throughout my life. I never really lapsed or anything, but over the last several months or so, I was introduced through mostly people in the Bitcoin space, the more traditional Catholics, and started getting a lot more deep into trying to kind of traditional Catholicism. I'm sure even if you're not Catholic, a lot of people have heard of Vatican II, which was kind of a really big change in the way the Catholic Church kind of operates and a lot of the cultural stuff with it. And starting to hear people push back against what happened in the Second Vatican Council and starting to understand maybe that wasn't the greatest thing in the world.
Yeah.
And so trying to get back to what the Catholic Church was before that, and really what I'm jumping around already, but I've always kind of desired some sort of, and more so recently, like really structure in my life and really like trying to find direction. And I've always, even though I'm very stubborn and very headstrong, when I believe something, you know, I really believe it. I kind of want someone kind of kicking the fear of God into me, for lack of a better term there. And so I guess I want, like, I'm trying to say, I want like some rigor in my life. Mm-hmm. And really trying to attain this difficult goal was really something I've always been searching for. And then once I started digging into the traditional Catholicism and starting to really dig deeper into the, you know, moral teachings of the Catholic Church, especially without all of the kind of flowery nonsense that gets put on it today, and almost downplaying a lot of the morality issues, it really started giving me this goal and really started making me reflect on my own life and being like, man, you know, achieving salvation is way more difficult than I've probably realized in the past, and I need a lot more help. And I really need to make different changes in my life in order to do that. And with that, you know, it might sound like, oh, well, you're that's something that's you know, puritanical or something, and that's a really miserable existence in life. But it's really not. And once you start you know, living your life this way, you start seeing how fulfilling life can be and more pleasant. Just an example, for Lent this past year, I decided to do fasting every day during the week. I was originally just going to do Wednesdays and Fridays, but I decided to do it every weekday. So I would just, I wouldn't eat until dinner time every night. So basically just one meal a day. And I thought that was going to be really, really difficult. And it ended up, I haven't stopped doing it.
Yeah.
Because I realized that, oh, this actually is just better. Like, I feel better. There's, you know, I'm not a big guy at all. I'm fairly thin and small, but I gain weight pretty easily. So it's kind of a struggle to maintain my body weight. And that has helped me tremendously. I, you know, life has gotten difficult at some points with time and stuff. So I haven't been able to work out like I used to. And just doing the fasting thing has helped me maintain my weight better than I ever have. So those kinds of things where you kind of add some discipline to your life and you don't give in to the instant gratification that's right in front of you, and you start to reap benefits kind of later on, and you can really build off that. And while I was doing this, I was also kind of having a somewhat of a change in my libertarianism as I dug deeper into Bitcoin and started to see really see what was going on with how devastating the government's control of the fiat money system really is, and how that raises time preference for people really high. And so people are always grasping for that instant gratification. And you can really tie all that back to the easy money system. And as you start to explore what happens when you have a hard money system, and you can tie this into stuff that Hans Hermann Hoppe talks about in Democracy, the God That Failed, the easy money system just destroys your society. The hard money system, because it incentivizes people to save, it incentivizes people to really delay gratification today in order to reap that benefit in the future. I said those words, I repeated those words on purpose because it's the same thing. And so when you've got, when you're trying to implement Bitcoin and you're surrounded by a lot of other Bitcoiners who are also thinking about this kind of stuff, you're all kind of making changes in your life because you are becoming more future oriented. And the one on the side of Bitcoin, it's because you're trying to save and become wealthier in the future. On the Catholic side, it's because you're trying to save your soul. And you start trying to care more about godly things than earthly things. So, between the libertarianism, the Bitcoin, and the Catholicism, it all really informed each other. And I started realizing how similar these themes in everything was. It's really been an interesting ride. And it's funny too. We're all libertarians here, I'm sure. Between you guys, obviously, and the listeners. And we all have those moments, you know, like, remember when you first figured out the nap? Yeah. And like how eye-opening that was and how exciting that was. And you wanted to like tell everyone about it. And you think like, man, that's really great. I have it all figured out. And then you have like the next thing that comes that blows your mind again.
Yeah.
At some point you reach the point where you're like, I'm pretty sure I got everything kind of like figured out. I'm not gonna really have these mind blowing experiences, but they just keep happening. And it's really exciting. And really, really fulfilling actually, because it also means that, man, it's like it's funny. There's the saying, the more you know, the more you learn, the more you realize you don't know.
Yeah.
And you know, that's constantly banging around in my head, but I never actually apparently believe it because I'm surprised every time I have these new epiphanies and stuff. But no, it's also good because it's very humbling, and it really shows you that, hey, why don't you calm down a little bit with thinking you know everything. Mm-hmm. Although that said, I also, and this could be a tangent to go off on, but I really do think that if you believe something, believe it. Don't be wishy-washy. If you're not sure about something, don't be sure about it. But especially with the purposes of religion and stuff, you know, strongly believe in what you claim to believe, and you know, constantly be testing that. But as long as you're really, you know, doing an honest job of testing to make sure that you're on the right path. If you're not confident about believing something or acting on your beliefs, then maybe they're not beliefs worth having. Or maybe you at least have to, you have to really reconsider and try to figure stuff out. And so tying it back into what I was saying a little bit before with these three different things kind of coalescing together, that's really given me some confidence to be like, no, I think I'm right here. And so I'm going to really try to pursue this. And fortunately that, you know, all of this also means that I can't point guns at people to make them do what I want them to do. So
Yeah. Like one thing that always, because my field is psychology, and I have some major issues with academic psychology, but one thing you notice in the small amount of research that is really good, you find that it is like a secular proof of a religious idea. Like that mm-hmm. is incredibly common. And that to me is also, you know, in academia, like they see that it's so incredibly obvious, but then they bury their head in the sand and they ignore it. Like, oh, see, look what we discovered with the scientific method, you know, acting as if that hadn't been around for thousands of years. But and I see more and more of that. And that has led me to similar epiphanies, like you're saying, how nature consistently replicates these long-held ideas that people now, or by now I mean last several hundred years, are rebelling against. You know, I see largely the rebellion against religion in a broad sense as the rebellion against nature. And then you end up with soft money, and mm-hmm. on a good day, and on a bad day, you end up with like the Soviet Union.
Sure, yeah. It's funny that it's kind of very I can't think of the word very popular culture idea nowadays for to say like. Huh. Religion, the opium of the masses, or oh, yeah. Religion's stupid, just poo-pooing religion. Everyone's got religion. Mm-hmm. Everyone's got a religion, whether you're Catholic, whether you're a Jew, you're a Muslim, or whether it's veganism or statism or anything else. A lot of these things, they're fine by themselves, but when life is difficult, life is weird, life is very challenging, it doesn't make sense. And so we need something to give us some direction in life. And I think that's a very innate thing to our humanity. And I think that's why I was kind of searching for that rigor that I was talking about in the beginning. You know, I think a trap you can get into libertarianism, and it's one that I fell into, is that doesn't become your religion, but I think people think that since it explains so much of the world and kind of runs counter to the typical red versus blue team kind of mentality, and it answers so many political questions, that we tend to think that, oh, well, this is what you need. You just really need the non-aggression principle, and hey, I'm kind of set. But I know Tom Wood said it before, and I really love this, is what happens if you're on your deathbed and you're reflecting on your life, and you say, the best thing you can say is, well, I never aggressed against anyone's rights. Would you be satisfied with that life? It just means you just kind of like, you could sit in your house all day and never see the light of day and probably accomplish that. But man, I wouldn't call you necessarily a good person. You probably just, you know what? No one would probably know you even existed. Mm-hmm. Probably lived a very sad, unfulfilled life. So we need some sort of direction on top of, well, we need to know what we should be doing, not just what we can't be doing, because libertarianism is all about negative rights. Yeah, negative right. rights being that, what can't I do to you? What can't you do to me? You basically owe me, we owe each other non-aggression. Well, that only tells you, informs a very small part of your life. And when we're interacting with people day to day, and it's one of the themes we as libertarians try to say to our normie friends all the time, it's that, man, you're so consumed about worrying about the state and what happens if we didn't have a state. But the vast majority of your day-to-day life, you're not interacting with the state. You're not being informed by the state. You're just interacting with other people. Mm-hmm. And so even as libertarians, we know that. So like, what do we do? We can't just like, we all have our morals on top of the non-aggression principle and stuff. So how do we pick those morals? How do we figure it out? So that's why I think people get caught up in other, you know, it might be statism. A lot of people get caught up in statism. You just see how people are losing their minds over politics right now. And the other big one now is with all the COVID nonsense, how people are like worshiping science. And that's the religion now. And not even good science. Like, it wouldn't be so bad if they actually knew what science was, but they're worshiping some fake, stupid science. And you see the problems that it causes, you know, because people don't have good ways to figure out what to do on their day-to-day lives.
Yeah. And one thing I notice a lot, like if I'm on Twitter, I'll see maybe like 2/3 of like anonymous Twitter accounts. You'll look in their bio and you'll see like, you know, libertarian, ANCAP, atheist, like all the time.
Yeah.
And hot take on my part, like I see that and I'm like, man, you know, if you're an atheist, that doesn't, to me, it doesn't de facto mean that you are not a thoughtful person.
Sure.
But like you alluded to earlier about how like the nap is, you know, that's all I need. I do think, and like you said earlier, that everybody has a religion. I think something is going to replace it. You know, I think that everybody has a certain ethos that they live by. And if you do, okay, I'm having a hard time wording this correctly. I mean, you can go to the like the Jordan Peterson idea that religion is something that evolved along with us. So it's like there's that mental framework that we have in our mind, you know, and if you nothing can exist in a vacuum, you know, if you do not have something that is, you can say Christianity, you know, tried and true, then something's going to replace it. And I see a lot of these libertarians now, especially with the election happening, acting a lot like statists. And I don't know, first of all, it's not my duty to change that, you know.
Right.
But I can't help but worry about cultural problems like that. And I can't help but worry about the next evolution after this. And the reason it really bothers me is I'm seeing it a lot in like our community, like these, and there's an upside too. I see a lot of people fighting against it, but people have become incredibly passionate about the LP. and I don't understand it, but I do see it as kind of a religious devotion, you know, either to the LP or to science or the party, you know, or whatever.
I think everyone wants to be, I didn't mean to cut you off.
No.
I think everyone wants to be on a winning team or something. And I don't know why you would pick the LP for that, but at least the chance to, I mean, I think what that does is it at least makes them feel like they're sitting at the big boy table. Yeah. That when they see those of us that reject politics, they're like, well, you're never, you know, your voice isn't even going to be heard a little bit. And I want to be on the winning team, certainly. Yeah. I just picked my team to be with God because, I mean, good luck fighting against him in the end. I think he's ultimately going to win. It's I don't know. I had like some grand thought that I could dig more into that, but Yeah, there has been like the cultural thing, especially with the leftism and just the craziness associated with that, has really just kind of pushed people's buttons. Not surprisingly, I mean, it is absolutely insane what's going on in the world right now. But I think you really kind of need to have a clear mind when you're trying to sort through it.
Yeah.
So you don't get caught up in stuff. I don't know how long, because do you remember, I guess it was about 4 years ago with the whole like immigration debate among libertarians, and you kind of had that alt-right side splinter off and become more of the Republican colors got exposed a little bit. Yeah, it was kind of, that was the first like wave of that kind of movement getting, they wanted to win. They were sick and tired of the cultural stuff. They wanted to win. So it's just kind of like, well, I'm done with you people. You're not actually doing really anything, because they're just not patient enough. I mean, they, to think that we're going to achieve anarchy, you know, next week or something, is just absolutely insane. We need tools. We need leverage. And then kind of in the time between that, you had this kind of reactionary movement where people kind of go left a little bit as a response to, and I know I did a little bit, you know, you want a virtue signal, like, oh, I'm not like those alt-right people, so I'll spend a little bit more time over here. And then you did swinging back in the other direction now, and especially because of how crazy the culture's got. And it's a tough one to kind of sort through, because, you know, being libertarians, there's that fine line to say, hey, I think your behavior is bad and I don't agree with it and it's morally wrong, but at the same time, you're doing it to yourself and to the community of people that you choose to be with. So I'm really kind of limited, as to what I can do there. Obviously, we're not trying to use force to stop a lot of this behavior, but it's really just like to your core, especially if you come from, you know, the right wing, more conservative side of things. It just like eats away at you, and when you're a libertarian, at least for me, when I was a libertarian, it was like eating at me. But at the same time, like, oh, I gotta say, none of my business. You can do what you know. But I just felt really, really unsatisfied with that. And what I ended up deciding or realizing was that it was really kind of turning my back on my faith a lot too, by not defending these certain ideas. And that's really kind of where like HAPA comes in and Bitcoin. Going back to kind of this time preference thing I was talking about. And just so that no one's worried about it, I'm not one of those Hoppians that has never read HAPA. It frustrates me so much, because HAPA has contributed so much and is such a brilliant, clear thinker on things. And they cherry pick one like throwaway line from a brilliant book and form some sort of fake ideology off it. Bitcoin was really the thing for me that really started kind of putting the pieces together, because I realized, all right, this is finally the tool that we as libertarians have to actually really fight against the core of the power structure that we're fighting against. I mean, the state gets power because it has the money. It's, you know, it's the Cantillon effect. So those closest to the source of the money are going to be the ones the most powerful. And so when they want to do something, they can just print money and they have it and they can afford it, and they get the advantages of having that, being able to spend that money first. And it kind of cycles through the rest of the economy, and it hurts us because it steals our wealth from us. So they've got this really strong stranglehold, and we finally have a thing that kind of chips away at that. And then when you, So as this is going on, hopefully we're able to start separating ourselves from the state, making the state a lot less powerful. Eventually, to the point that we make it obsolete through the technology that's produced by a Bitcoin standard, because the market just is going to outstrip, the market always outstrips the state. And so if you have the market, you know, going on nitros and supercharges behind Bitcoin, then it's really going to accelerate that. And so what next? You know, what happens there? How do we live our lives? What happens? If you look at Hoppe, and he says in these kind of communities, these private communities, that you're going to have the people that are the most productive are going to be the ones that kind of rise to the top. And when you have these people that are the most economically and socially productive, they're probably going to lead the happiest lives. They're probably going to be happy. And the people in the community are going to say, whoa, what is this guy doing that is making him like a really fulfilled guy? And everyone likes him and everyone wants to be like him and be around him. So what's he doing that I'm not doing and I can do to do that? And so that's why I think that there are certain moralities that are better than others, and those that choose those good moralities are going to be the ones that rise to the top and start attracting other people to that. So that's why I like the morality that comes with traditional Catholicism. And so I kind of tease people on Twitter where I say, like, you're all going to be Catholic, libertarian Bitcoiners. Because that's where I'm trying to steer that ship.
Yeah. Well, that's really similar to the natural order.
Like, right. Yeah.
It's about and Mises. And
yes. And that's perfect.
Yeah.
Because I mean, how else is it going to work out? I mean, there's a market. Everything is, we're always in a market system. It's because government is unfortunately part of that. Yes, they add a lot of fetters and hamper us so that we're not able to do things without coercion. But there is this grand overarching marketplace of ideas, and if they have control of the ideas and the minds, at the end of the day, everything that the government does is, you can argue, is permissioned by the populace. And if the populace permits everything that the government does, it's going to do that. So that's going to always keep happening. That's going to continue. So once we are able to defeat the state, there's still going to be this marketplace of ideas. The best, there's going to be a market for ideologies and moralities. And so the best ones are going to rise to the top, and the bad ones are hopefully going to get eliminated. And I think a lot of libertarians that don't take as much of a strong moral stance on a lot of things, or at least don't reject a lot of what, you know, I'll call, I don't even know what to call it. Maybe just more that people are going to get mad at that too. Every term I'm coming up with, I'm like, that's going to piss people off.
You mean like a libertarian? Isn't that what they're called now?
Yeah, kind of like that. But I was going to say libertine or leftist, yeah, or something, or degenerate. But like, yeah, just I'll use kind of an extreme example, but one that's kind of relevant. I mean, do we really think that a society that has transvestites doing story times in your kid's school is going to produce well functioning and well socialized children? Like, is that the world you want to live in, or do you want to, or should we decide that, hey, I think there's better ways to kind of teach our kids this stuff? And maybe people are hesitant to do that because they think it's putting the car before the horse a little bit, to say, hey, well, let's just like work on the state right now and everything. But or they agree with maybe not that. I don't think there's that many people that actually, at least in our world, would agree that's a good idea. But I mean, you can use your imagination and think about any of this other stuff. somewhere on the spectrum between, you know, strict Catholic morality versus crazy, you know, trannies running around doing pole dances for kids.
Yeah.
So there's going to be somewhere in there that is the optimal path to take. And, you know, if we can figure that out now, why wait to pursue that path too? We can kind of kill two birds with one stone.
Yeah. And like what everybody's talking about right now is this Cuties show on Netflix.
Oh, goodness.
It's insane. Like, I feel like we're living through something really crazy right now in the fact that, like, all these major news outlets are writing about, like, the weird right-wing issue with child sexuality. Like, yeah. I don't see it as tenable, you know, that this divide happening right now. And
I try to have a glass half full optimistic approach and give people the benefit of the doubt. But and even when the Cuties thing first came out and everyone was flipping out, like we've seen this show many times before. Mm-hmm. They kind of leak, and both sides do it. The right and the left do this, and the other side always swallow the bait, hook, line, and sinker, where they kind of like give a little bit, give a little teaser for something, and the other side flips out and like, oh yeah, this is so insane, it's so evil and so bad, and then they actually show whatever they were teasing, and it's like, yeah. It's just, they have to wear egg on their faces because they overreacted with stuff. And I'm not talking about like television shows, just in general. Like the great recent one was when Trump, it got leaked that he was asking about getting his face on the Mount Rushmore. And you know, they were just like, I would have loved, like, they were probably high-fiving when whoever came up with that idea came up with the idea, because it's so stupid.
Yeah.
And you know it's never going to happen, but just like the suggestion of it just makes people flip out. And it's always nothing. And it's always, and then it comes out, they just kind of, someone suggested it or something. Trump, that sounds like a pretty good idea, you know? And so that's just red meat for Trump supporters. And so I thought that this was kind of something that the left would be doing with the Cuties thing. And my reaction was, all right, I have a very hard time believing that there's just going to be this overt, like, pedophilic sexualization of children on a Netflix show. You know, Netflix has all sorts of nonsense on it, just like, you know, every place. But, I mean, come on. It's not going to be that bad. And then I saw a couple clips in the last week or so. And I'm like, holy cow, it is that bad. I would have lost a lot of money on that bet.
Yeah.
And it is just, and like, who in the world looks at that and says, yeah, let's put that on our website. No, that's good. Or goes on, you know, has their cable news show and says, yeah, let's defend this.
Yeah.
Like, it's just, are these people just so deluded by red team versus blue team that it's just all pure reactionaryism, and they just don't think, it's just the other side hates it, so I gotta like it and defend it. I'm sure there's some of that, but I would think that would be for more of just your average Joe who's just kind of taking his talking points from whatever he sees on cable news that night. But man, the people more in power, I mean, there's something sick going on.
Oh yeah. And I can't, there's not much I can say about it. You know, I would think that it would be so clear that this is not okay. And it's one of those things I can't explain to someone that this is not okay. You just can't. If it's not apparent to them, then you are not on, like, you are not working with the same premises, you know, and you cannot communicate.
Yeah, I'm sure it would be like a couple hundred years ago, you're watching a black guy get lynched or something, and you're just like, and you look around and everyone's just kind of like smiling, nodding at you, like, yeah, awesome. And you're like, wait, what? Yeah, you can't have a conversation there. You can't, like, it's, you're just, you're doing, am I taking crazy pills here?
Yeah.
Like, what's going on? So it's just, yeah, it is kind of like, you just know, you can feel it inside of you. And even, you know, we all have our biases. We all want to be right. And so when last week, when the cutie things came out and I was prepared to go back and defend my original hypothesis, and I started seeing it, and you just like have that feeling deep inside of you. Just like, this is just, even before I, you know, admitted it consciously that I was way off on that.
Yeah.
You just like feel it inside of you, just like, oh, this is just like my eyes were bugging out of my head.
Mm-hmm.
Like with each passing moment, like my mouth would hang open more, and it was just, whoa.
Well, I went ahead and muted cuties and Netflix on Twitter.
Good call.
You can't do it. Well, let's go ahead and it seemed zero. His internet went out.
Oh yeah, I saw he popped out. Wasn't sure.
So he's texting me saying he's working on it.
Okay.
But if he's not able to make it in his memory, let's get a bit back to our discussion about religion, and I'm gonna ask you an incredibly broad question.
Sure.
What is your definition of God?
He is. That's funny. I should be able to rip off an answer right away. He is the Alpha, the Omega. He is the Creator. Give him very broad answers to your broad question, but yeah, he is the omnipotent and omniscient, all powerful being. A little bit redundant there. That is responsible for my creation and everyone's creation, creation of everything that is around us. And I owe him my devotion and worship. It's kind of funny that omniscience and omnipotence. I was thinking about this the other day, and it's like, well, is he both, or is he just one or the other? Or is it the same thing? Kind of go off on a tangent there. A little interesting, thread to pull there. I'm really unsatisfied with my answer there.
Well,
but I don't know how to answer it, but it's like, it's one of those questions almost where it's like, we know what it is, but we can't put it into words.
Yeah. Well, let me tell you what I've been thinking about. Maybe you can piggyback on that.
Sure.
Like I've been thinking about, I forget where I heard it. It might've been when Ted was on Friends Against Government recently, or Paz might've been telling me about it or tweeting about it. But I was thinking about like the different light spectrums that are not visible to humans.
Mm-hmm.
And different, like, I mean, a really interesting example is dark matter. You know, like it is a thing, but you can't see it. Right. There's no weight to it, but it affects us incredibly greatly. So with that, like, we know and people accept that there are things that exist in this world that we do not have access to, like direct access to. Like, we don't have access to all of the colors. We just have access to the seven, you know?
Right. And trying to think about what the other colors are is just like unfathomable.
Yeah. And in line with that, like, I'm thinking another premise that everybody accepts is in this world, there are patterns. You know, and like back to natural order, you know, there are clear patterns, like there are clear things that work and things that do not. Oh, zero's coming back in.
Nice.
There are clear patterns. And so what you can say is you don't have to get specific on how stringent it is, but like there is a certain order to the universe or consciousness maybe. Mm-hmm. But so, I mean, it's hard for me. I don't think from those two things you can directly jump to like a very definite, typical definition of God as like a conscious creator that willed creation, but that does leave these things that everybody accepts leaves room open to some sort of central guiding force. And that is my working definition at the moment in my thinking.
Yeah, I tend to like that. I think it's very important to recognize, and as you did, that it's something beyond us. People love to bring up things like, well, if God loves people so much, you know, why does he send them to hell, or why does he let bad things happen to, you know, good people? And it's like, I don't know. I'm not God.
Yeah.
Like there's just so much that's outside of what we can reason through, although we can reason through a lot of stuff. But, you know, we're not on the same plane, as God, of a plane of being, we're not on the same level. There's, you know, if you believe in angels like I do, we're not even the next level below God. There's a bunch of steps in between us. So, I think it's perfectly fair to kind of say, hey, I have this general feeling or general thought about who God is. And there's been certain ways that, you know, he's been revealed to us through scripture and then by sending Jesus here that we can think about it. But at the end of the day, I don't think our minds can comprehend. That's why there's just like there's in religion, or at least I'll speak to Catholic religion, there's certain mysteries that are out there where it's just kind of like, this is what the teaching is, and we can't explain it, but this is what it is.
Yeah.
Like, how can you be both truly God and truly man?
Yeah.
I don't know, but that's what the doctrine of the church is.
Yeah. And I think it's interesting. There are a lot of people that are incredibly interested they believe in a lot of, wacky conspiracies. You know, like they're talking mm-hmm. about cobalt under the pyramids, you know, being superconductors and, you know, Planet 12 and Anunnaki and all this stuff. And they're like, but God, what are you talking right. about? That's crazy.
Yeah. It's funny. Those people want to have like answers for everything. Yeah. They want to know, I know exactly what happened here. And I, you know, so, I guess it's because you have to release control. You have to say, because as a Catholic, you know, I don't believe that I as a human are capable of achieving salvation. It is only through the grace of God, through Jesus, that I can do that. So with that right there, you have to really humble yourself and accept that you are not the master of your own destiny necessarily. I mean, you have free will and everything, but you need this extraordinary amount of help. And it's kind of funny we're talking about this. And maybe it's in the back of my head because the homily at Mass this morning I went to kind of was talking about this, how when God came down to the world and became you know, man, true God, true man, he had to like really, really humble himself. You know, he was born in dirt poverty to a teenage mother who was unmarried. in a stable in a manger. And then he immediately had to become a refugee because Herod wanted to kill him. And then after about 30 years, they thanked him by nailing him to a tree. And he died of asphyxiation. And then before that, they scourged him. They stripped him naked. They put a crown of thorns on his head. They spit at him. They laughed at him. And then when he finally died, that's not enough. We're going to ram a spear through your side. And I think that that's done on purpose because, or not done on purpose, but was allowed to happen was it's showing that like, this is how much God humbled himself to be, to share in our humanity. So like that little bit of humility that we have to have, like that's the our role model right there. Obviously Jesus is, he's going to be a better role model for you. So like, yeah, if he's going to humble himself that much, yeah, it takes a little bit of humility on our part too. And so kind of circling back, that's why I think people feel like they have to have answers all the time because they're trying to push back against that, that humility that really, really need to have. Cause it's difficult. It's not fun to say, you know what? I'm not totally in control as much as I want to be. But then I say that at the same time, I also say that you should, well, that's not a contradiction. Cause I was going to say, you have to take real control of your life, but that's just not making excuses. Yeah. Taking that extreme ownership. And I think that's kind of also an important thing is that, at the end of the day, it's not only that humility, but it's also understanding that, it's up to you. It's up to you to kind of accept God's grace and God's love. And you can't blame other people for your decision not to do that. Because at the end of the day, what are we worried about? Are we really all worried about earthly things? If we believe in God and in heaven and hell and an afterlife, and it's going to be either just unfathomably better than what we have now, if we get to heaven, I don't want to say achieve heaven, if we're graced yeah. heaven, or if we earn hell, that would be just unfathomably worse than anything. Do we really want to just leave it up to other people to carve our path, help us carve our path for us? Or do we want to, really make sure that we're doing everything we can to get to where we feel like we want to be?
Yeah. And I think that, I'm just now reconnecting after my little hiatus of 20 minutes. But I do think that ties back into libertarianism, where we recognize that you own yourself and that you're responsible for just everything that goes on in your life. And yeah, like you're saying, it's, do you want to rely on other people, or do you want to take that responsibility for yourself? And so, yeah, that really ties into just this whole theme that you're talking about at the beginning, where whether you come at it from like a libertarian point of view or a religious point of view, like it's really cool to see all those, like all of that converging like into one theme. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's, I love that you brought that up, because I wasn't even thinking about tying that back into libertarianism. And I'll do you one better. I'll tie it into Bitcoin. One of the slogans, not your keys, not your coins. It's a bare asset. Now it's up to you to secure your private keys for your ownership of your Bitcoin. And it's up to you to run a full node so that you don't have to trust other people to make sure that you're, participating fully in the network and not getting cheated. There are ways, there's finally tools there in order for you to help achieve that, the ability to not make any excuses and to say, hey, I'm going to take control of my life and steer it in the direction that I feel is best.
Yeah. Now, did you want to talk about Bitcoin a little bit more? Cause like for someone like me, I have like Coinbase on my phone mm-hmm. and I have some Bitcoin, but when I got into it, it was more of like an investment for me.
Sure.
And so I just kind of watched it, right? But obviously I think that for like the point of Bitcoin is to actually use it as a currency, And so where would I start if I wanted to actually start being able to use it and kind of avoid the state when in regards to my transactions and stuff like that?
Yeah, so that's a good question, because that's kind of a raging debate in the community, whether it's Bitcoin versus other altcoins, or even just within more of the hardcore Bitcoin community. Bitcoin, like right now, it's we're what, 11 years into it. So imagine the internet, you know, being 11 years old and what it's like to be in that space. Like we're only like the base layer still has work to do in Bitcoin. So it's like the internet being in the time when the internet was starting. It's like, you know, we're still trying to get like the packets switching, like kind of ossified in there. But it doesn't mean you can't use it. I will say that saving Bitcoin, just using it as a savings vehicle to secure your wealth and to keep it away from the clutches of the state, manipulating it. I think that's using Bitcoin. I think that's a perfectly good use case for it, especially if you believe that it's going to appreciate in value a lot more. Like why, for me, I don't want to really spend any of my Bitcoin because I'm going to lose out. Like whatever I'm going to use my Bitcoin for today, I'm going to, what I suspect will be the value of Bitcoin at some point in the future, I'm going to be like, wow, I really spent, I gave away Bitcoin for that. Now that said, there's nothing wrong with using Bitcoin, you know, spending Bitcoin or something if that's what you want to do. And there's certain benefits to spending it, because there is, you have the ability to avoid censorship from the state. I mean, we see, you know, YouTube shutting people down, PayPal shutting people down, all these money, you know, go anywhere, look at anyone that's kind of controversial, and you'll probably see them having issues with sending and receiving money. People get lose bank accounts, all sorts of that kind of stuff. So in the case of you wanting to kind of not live in a permissioned world, you know, Bitcoin works very well that way. Right now, since it is really, you know, using Bitcoin on chain, I mean, that's like central bank, that's the equivalent of central banks, like validating gold and settling with gold. So right now it's really the most reliable way to transact with Bitcoin, but it would be like using a forklift to carry your groceries from your car to your house. There's things like the Lightning Network that are starting to make it, adding layers on top that make it, you know, instant transactions that rely on the final settlement of the blockchain to provide security. And it does it instantly and extremely cheaply. And there's no reason to believe there won't be layers built on top of that, or built on top of other secondary layers and everything. But yeah, to more directly answer your question, I said it already, but you know, just saving in Bitcoin is I think the best use case for it right now, just because we're speculating on it becoming world money, and we're really kind of the pioneers going across the continental U.S. to California to get that gold and strike it rich over there. In the meantime, I mean, I think the best, if you're going to spend Bitcoin anywhere, go to libertymugs.com and spend all your Bitcoin there. Actually, I need to fix that. I got some issues with my BTC Pay server. So maybe give me a week or two to get that back up. But, yeah, I mean, if you're interested in spending Bitcoin, and I think it actually might. Well, one good way to help spread adoption and to help more people become aware of Bitcoin is that if you need to pay someone something, offer to pay them in Bitcoin. And that might make them say, like, well, what's that? Like, what do I need to do that? And why should I do that? It's a good opportunity to just kind of spread the word. I think a better way would be to offer to accept payment in Bitcoin. And especially because, you know, if you believe that it's going to appreciate in value a lot, accept it at a discount and say, hey, I'll knock off 10% of whatever I owe you, owe me if you pay me in Bitcoin. Now all of a sudden they say, whoa, I'm saving money here. What's this Bitcoin thing? And you can kind of get them say, hey, you can, you know, you can buy here and, you know, do research here and this is how you send it to it and explain. It's like no one can stop you when you're doing this. This is value that is now yours. And if you want to send it somewhere or hold on to it, like you're secure and you're like, it's separate from the rest of the system. So, did that help out at all? I know I jumped around a lot.
Yeah. It was kind of funny. You're talking about how to get other people involved with Bitcoin and stuff like that. And, you were saying like, oh, you know, like have them pay you for stuff. And I was like, and it's kind of funny because I had been thinking the past week or two about like, if I actually were to do some side job for someone, right, I would ask for like 223 ammo if they had it.
Yeah. It's same difference though. I mean, if you can find someone that kind of unfortunately, I will say, Bitcoin isn't money yet. So it's, I'll put it more in the barter category a little bit with the 223. But hey, if you can find someone that's willing to do that and that's what you want anyway, then go for it.
Yeah. I've been paid in beer a couple of times.
Oh yeah. My brother and I, you know, transact in beer. And it's funny because it ends up being like a running tab that never actually gets settled.
Yeah.
So right now you're saying use Bitcoin as like a way to protect your wealth, right? And now do you see, like, I'm thinking like you're not, like there's not really a point where you're like, oh, okay, now's the, like I think at some point you're going to be like, okay, now is obviously the time where like I can start spending this if I want to, right? So, I mean, I don't know. Maybe I've answered my own question.
I think I know what you're
at. What are the signs? Yeah.
It's when, if you want to make a transaction, the only way that it can get done is by you spending Bitcoin, which means it becomes money at that point. So what's going to happen? And I wrote a piece about this a little while ago. I think it's called Dear Libertarians, Bitcoin Fixes This. But as Bitcoin starts to take more of the world's wealth into it, and people are going to become more aware of it, more people are going to use it as a safe haven or as a hedge, more people are going to start trying to save in it. There's something, you know, Gresham's law, bad money drives out good money, is kind of the way it gets kind of the quick form of it. So what that means is that like Gresham's law applies with, say, quarters. Back in the 60s and before that, they used to put silver in the quarters. And then they took the silver away. Well, those silver quarters aren't in circulation anymore because people realize that the silver quarters are more valuable than the regular quarters. And so those silver quarters kind of became something else because no one's ever going to spend them. So that money's no longer in circulation anymore. And that happens when you have legal tender laws and a government to enforce it. But when you have something that kind of transcends those legal tender laws like Bitcoin, the reverse, what's kind of referred to as the reverse of Gresham's law happens, which is Thiers law, which good money drives out bad money. So as more people start to recognize that Bitcoin is appreciating in value and they speculate that it's going to continue to appreciate in value, meanwhile, they see the current money, the US dollar, is losing value and continuously losing value. They see that because of, the purchasing power is being lost, whereas Bitcoin's purchasing power is increasing. So people are going to start wanting to accept Bitcoin in payment more. And they'll take, there'll be a premium for accepting the fiat. And eventually that premium will keep increasing and increasing until it reaches infinity, which just means that there's no premium high enough for someone to accept the dollars in payment. And they'll only accept Bitcoin.
Yeah.
So it's just this kind of this shift, if you can picture like a seesaw kind of thing, that you're taking weight from the fiat side and rolling it over into the Bitcoin side, and eventually that's going to start leveling out and then tipping and tipping and tipping, and then all of a sudden it's all going to just flip over to the other side. And at that point, you're going to have no choice but to spend your Bitcoin in payment. But at the same time, no one else is going to have any choice but to pay you in Bitcoin. So, you know, it just means you're using it as money, and you're using a money that is, it's a hard money, so it's appreciated in value. So you just holding that same number of monetary units, you become wealthier. So it ends up being, it's like, this is why I'm so excited about Bitcoin, is because prior to Bitcoin, I thought that I needed to go out and convince everyone to be libertarians and to accept liberty. And we've all had arguments with people, and it was like the most depressing outlook in the world. Like, man, I can't even convince my parents of this. How am I going to like convince strangers? And, you know, we've all had some, you know, we all have stories about converting people here and there, and, you know, it's great and everything, but man, talk about a lot of work and painful work. But with Bitcoin, you know, you can just fall back to first principles of like Ludwig von Mises and human action and say like, oh, people are just going to pick Bitcoin over dollars just simply because it's better. They don't have to be convinced of anything. It just accomplishes what they're trying to do way better. And money is just the thing that drives the economy. That's the most important thing in the world, materially, that is. And so people are just going to use the better option. It's just like when Uber came out. You didn't need to like go out of your way and like sit a person down and lecture them about how bad taxis are and here's the pros and cons of using Uber over taxis. It was better. And the market just destroyed the taxi medallion fascist system. And I remember my dad when Uber first came out and we're talking about it, he goes, you can't just get into a stranger's car like that. That's horrific. And then he was out a little while ago and he finally had a smartphone and downloaded Uber because he needed to get somewhere. And it became so commonplace that he just knew that's what he had to do. And if you ever ask him about it, you know, he's going to talk your ear off about how it's the greatest thing in the world. And he says, I can't, you know, taxis are awful. I can't believe we used to use taxis. And we see this any time that a new technology comes over. We can't even remember what life was like before it, like the internet or YouTube. YouTube hasn't been around for that long. Is it like 2009? Like
6, 7, I think.
Or, yeah, somewhere around there. Smartphones were just like not long after that. What did you do before Wikipedia that you needed to find something like information about some topic pretty quickly? So many things that out of nowhere it's this brand new thing that everyone's terrified of using it and it's clunky and it's bad and everything. And then one day you look back and like, I don't even remember what life was like without this. And I think Bitcoin's going to do the same thing. It's going to get way easier to use. You're not going to have to be convinced about it. You're not going to need to sit down and then like do all the technical stuff with it. Any sort of like technical talk about Bitcoin right now, it's because, you know, we're nerds and we think it's cool and interesting and we want to be those pioneers I was talking about going across the country to California. But right now, and those guys really needed to have some really good knowledge and skills to make that trip across there because they were, you know, going on horseback and wagons and everything. And they had to know how to fight off animals and Indians and weather and disease and all that other stuff. Now, if you want to go from where I live and the East Coast to California, I hop on an airplane. I get on a train. I don't think about it. It's really easy. I don't have to worry about all that kind of stuff. And it's going to be the same thing with Bitcoin. And it's going to like not only, look, those guys back then really knew what they were doing, but a lot of them died along the way. A lot of them had a lot of trouble. We don't die going to California anymore. So once again, it'll be the same thing with Bitcoin. Is there's not going to be issues. You're not going to have to think about it. It's just going to be just what you do.
Yeah. Okay. Zero, you got any more questions?
No, I think I'm good.
Awesome.
Okay. So,
you're selling all your possessions and buying Bitcoin.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah. Tomorrow. I'm going to get some sleep first, but
there was something in the Gospels about Jesus saying, sell all your possessions and follow me. They forgot to finish what he was saying. Follow me to buy Bitcoin. So we're going to
I'll sell my wife's cat first. Yeah.
There you go. Well, that might be, you might want to hold on to the cat because that's your emergency food supply. Which is what I tell my cat all the time when he starts acting up. So remember what you actually are here.
So Rollo, why don't you go ahead and tell everybody where they can find you?
Sure. I'm mostly on Twitter at Rollo McFlugel. Also at McFlugel.com. We just celebrated last month our 8-year anniversary from Slappy and I starting that. It was originally a blog. We do occasionally do some writing. I'm actually working on a piece about Bitcoin and electricity and why you shouldn't have to worry about the power going out with Bitcoin. And then also I think it's about 3 years now we've been doing a podcast. So it's called The Rollo and Slappy Show. You can find it at McFlugel.com too. And then also, I've already mentioned it, but libertymugs.com. It's exactly what it sounds like. It's libertarian-themed mugs. And that's on Twitter, too, at libertymugs. So,
all right. And then that article that you mentioned, Libertarians, Bitcoin Fixes This. We're going to link that in the description.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah, and that'll be at dissectingliberty/46. So nice. All the show notes.
Sweet.
All right,
man. Well, we appreciate you coming on.
Yeah. Thanks for having me on. This is something way different than what I'm used to talking about. So, it really, really made the gears turn in my brain and, you know, helped me a lot actually. So hopefully it helped the listeners out. I appreciate you guys having me on. This was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. All right, well, this is Liberty Zero with his internet connectivity problems. And I'm reminding you to zero your rifle.
And this is Cotton with holes in his roof. I'm looking at a hole right now, reminding you to pick Cotton voluntarily.